But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host, friend, and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. It's been a couple of days since we've sat together, and I'm sure you've had many culinary adventures.
I have. I've had a few. I was in the city last week. I went to the Modern, which is in MoMA, you know, Museum of Modern Art. It's a Danny Meyer restaurant. He's a pretty big restaurateur in the city. He's got a bunch of things in there. But this is, I think, probably his finest restaurant. It's a 2-star Michelin restaurant, and the place is beautiful. It's, I think it's on 53rd, and it's really, really beautiful inside. They did a great job, and you know, the dining room overlooks this little.
So wait, that's 53rd and like Central Park West.
Yeah. So it overlooks a sculpture garden, and it's really nice. It's a beautiful setting. They have a really nice bar area, great wine list. He's got I think a Wine Spectator Grand Award. You know, the wine list is huge, and it's really well chosen and great. So we started out, we went into the bar area. We were there about 45 minutes early for dinner, so went to the bar area and had
Let's back up. Who was dining?
Val and I.
Just you and Val?
Yeah, just the two of us. It was kind of like her birthday celebration, you know? She was she turned 29 again.
Very nice.
Yeah. Excuse me. So we went in and we had a little glass of wine at the bar. I think she had a Vermentino and I had a Gruner Veltliner.
A Lementino.
Vermentino.
Yeah.
Lementino, yeah. It's like Vermicello.
What is Vermentello?
Vermentino. All right, say it three times so you know.
Vermentino.
There you go. All right. Vermentino is a grape that's it's in Italy. You know, it's grown in Sardinia a lot too. But really kind of an interesting sort of aromatic kind of white wine. Really nice. Anyway, so we had a glass, I think maybe two glasses of that, and then we went into the dining room. And we had, there was a menu there. They have a choice of, there's two ways to go. You can do... there's two tasting menus. One is like 5 or 6 courses. The other one's 7 or 8. And they're really, I mean, the food is exceptional. It's just absolutely fabulous. And so we took the first dining menu. I think the 5-course one is $175 and the other one's $275. So we chose the $175 because I wasn't really starving and, you know, neither was Val. So, and we were going to have some wine with it. So it was just, you know, I guess they started us off. We had this, hang on 1 second. I can find it right here for you. The first course, there were almost like little tastes, like almost amuse-bouches that come out. And the first course was, it was like a tuna in a little bit of a pastry cup, a small pastry cup, about the size of $0.50. And it had tuna with radish and shiso. Shiso is like a leaf that you see a lot of times in Japanese restaurants. It's like a cross between mint and cilantro kind of thing. And then the second course came out on these two spoons, and it was summer squash, like sliced very thinly, with gooseberries and goat cheese. And it was a really interesting bite. You know, the gooseberries, I don't know if you ever had them. They're very tart. And... you know, they had that fruity, berry-ish thing, you know, but they almost like there's a lemony aspect to it. You know, there's a, you know, kind of a tart, which really played well off the squash and the goat cheese. And then the next course, which was kind of cool, was like a little lobster tail, a small lobster tail came out in like a sort of like a tomatoey broth, a clear tomatoey broth with they had cucumber sorbet and a poached green tomato. Little green cherry tomato that was peeled. It was very good. The course was great. And the next thing that came out was these Parker House rolls. And the rolls were like considered a course. You know, the bread is like a bread course. And they had this really nicely brown butter that was, you know, usually when you think of brown butter, you think it's melted. But this was like whole butter. It was browned and brought back together again and served at room temperature, which is nice. Because it's nothing worse than cold butter. You're trying to spread it on bread.
There's nothing worse than frozen butter.
Frozen butter is even worse, yeah. And then the next course was this grilled scallop that came out with like little, it was on a bed of like a sea urchin sauce with cauliflower, little florets of cauliflower and crisp lentils. The only lentils that were fried and crisped up,
wow.
Like, almost like popped rice, puffed rice, you know. And then the next course you had a choice of either a halibut with fava beans in like a sweet corn broth. Or a chicken breast with chanterelle mushrooms and kumquats. So we had one of each and we shared them. And I got to tell you, the chicken to me was probably the dish of the night, which sounds almost like pedestrian. But they handled the chicken. The outer skin of it was kind of bronzed, you know, and it was really crisp. I know how they do it. It takes a lot of time. You know, you got to cook it for a very, like, not, a, I won't say a very long time, but you got to brown that skin in a kind of a cast iron pan.
And was it a breast?
Yeah, it was a breast.
So yeah, boneless.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
But as much as the skin was bronzed and crisped, the meat under it was tender. It wasn't, you know, because chicken breast can get really dry, you know, if you're not paying attention.
And it had skin on it?
Yeah. Yeah, the skin was like crisp skin that you would really want to eat, you know. And not like, you know, sometimes you get the crisp chicken skin. This was really hard crisp. It was really like snap, crackle, all of it, not like a little bit here and there. It was great. And then, you know, the waiter come to me, the sommelier actually came to me and said, oh, it was your dish of the night. I said, you know, oddly enough, the chicken. He goes, yeah, no, we pride ourselves in that one. That was the chef's really proud of that. I said, we should be. It was great, you know. And then for dessert, we had this thing called peaches and cream, which was, you know, basically peaches and cream. I mean, all dude it up and stuff, you know, it was nice.
And was it like an ice cream or it was like with like a heavy cream or something?
Yeah, no, it had a little bit of ice cream there. It was peaches and there was a couple of sauces. It was really cool. And he brought us out a chocolate thing, too. I mean, I got talking to the sommelier, you know, I ordered a... my first bottle of wine, we ordered a Pernod Vergelie, which was, it's kind of an odd choice, especially for somebody who looks like me. You know, I don't look like a wine guy. So as soon as I ordered that, I had the sommelier's strict attention. He came over and, oh, yeah, have you had this wine? Yeah, I've had it before, you know. So we started talking. And then he goes, oh, you know a lot about this. I said, well, I'm in the business, you know, whatever. So that changed the relationship completely.
And what type of wine was that?
It's a white Burgundy. It's a Chardonnay. But it's an odd, you know, people know Meursault and Pauligny Montrachet and all that stuff. Pernod Vergelie is a you know, a, kind of an odd little place over there. And they produce stellar wines. And then we had a red Burgundy for dessert called Ose Duress, you know, which is another kind of odd pick. You know, a lot of people would pick like a Cote de Beaune or a Pommard or, you know, anyone is.
So I have to show my lack of intelligence. Can you have a white Burgundy?
Yeah. Yeah. The Pernod Vergelie was a white Burgundy. So just to give a quick lesson, Burgundy has basically four types of grapes, right? They have Chardonnay, which is most of the whites are made of Chardonnay. They have Pinot Noir, where most of the reds are made of Pinot Noir. But they also make Gamay, which is the grape in Beaujolais, which is also in that area. And they also make Aligoté, which is another white. And it's probably maybe less than 10% of all the production in Burgundy. So anyway, that's the cheat sheet on Burgundy. And both wines were just absolutely stellar good. The wine list was massive, and you can spend... you know, $50 on a bottle of wine, and you can spend $10,000 on a bottle of wine. They have it all there, you know. I chose not to spend $10,000 on a bottle of wine because I would be throwing up for the next 3 weeks thinking about the bill. But, you know, I guess there are some people who have enough ammunition. And, you know, a lot of those wines are just kind of window dressing on a wine list, you know. They very rarely sell at retail prices, you know, unless you get some guy to just hit a big stock or something and you got a bunch of people throwing money around. But for the most part, I mean... I've been at dinners where somebody spent almost $20,000 on wine. I got to tell you, it's few and far between. And A, and it wasn't me. B, you know, that did it. So, but yeah, it was just a perfect night. I mean, it was you know, the service is top notch. The it's everything you would expect from a 2-star Michelin restaurant. It was just perfect food, perfect service, perfect wines. It was just great. I have nothing but admiration for these.
So let me ask you this. Is it hard to get a reservation?
No, it wasn't for me. And in the summer, you know, the city slows down a little bit. So, but I got to tell you, they were busy. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I've been saying this for a while now.
Day of the week did you go?
We went on Monday.
Which would be a quiet day, but you're saying it was a lot of action.
In the city, actually, it's usually the weekends that are more quiet because everybody heads to the Hamptons, you know, and gets out of Dodge. But, you know, I got to tell you, they had a full room, you know, probably seats 800 people, something like that. And then they have a bar area with a different menu that's a little lighter and a la carte, you know what I mean? So you can order just...
So this is a weird question. You know, we talk about the food, we talk about the ambiance. What was the dress code of the people?
Business casual, you know.
I mean, were there a lot of men with jackets and...
Yeah, with and without. You know,
people in jeans.
Yeah, you know, not ripped up, but you know, yeah. I mean, I was one of them. I had a jacket on, but I also had a t-shirt and jeans. You know, nice ones. You know, not you know, and I actually wore shoes, so I didn't get thrown out with my clogs. You know, or Crocs, I should say. And yeah, it was. It's really kind of a what I like about the place. Is that it's very serious food and wine, but it's a casual atmosphere. It's not like it, you know, I've often said that I would rather have a 3-star restaurant than a 4-star restaurant because the vibe is different. You know, I remember I used to go to Gotham Bar and Grill all the time in the city. That was my favorite restaurant forever. And it was a 3-star restaurant with absolutely impeccable food. It was great fun. It was a great people-watching place because the bar was elevated a little bit, and the dining room was busy. I mean, they probably sat 150 people in the dining room. It was always busy, so it was interesting that people watch while you were there. And if you perch yourself on the return of the bar, you know, they call that little one that goes against the wall of return, and you'd have 3 or 4 seats, and then the bar L's out and goes the other way. You could watch the entire room for the whole night and just have a lot of fun there. But it was a casual vibe. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, like when you go to La Bernardin, I mean, people are walking you to the men's room and there's guys in tuxedos and, you know, 6 people come to your table to drop the thing. And I get it, but it's, I don't know. I just think it doesn't have to be that serious. I don't want to feel like I'm going to church or, you know, or some, you know, kind of religious experience. You know, it's just dinner for God's sake, you know. Anyway, so that was that. And then Saturday night, I had off. I had one of them rare Saturdays that I had off. And so we decided to check out this place in Huntington that just opened up called Luca. You know of it?
I heard that there's a trendy, nice Italian.
Quasi-Italian.
Taste
yeah.
to it.
Yeah. It's how do I explain this? They have a place in Stony Brook, obviously called Luca, which is an Italian restaurant that does absolutely a great job. And it's not... I was talking to the owner about it. It's not your typical Italian restaurant menu, which appeals to me in a huge way, right? And I've eaten there a few times, and the food is always great. So they decided to take over what used to be Red in Huntington, which is right across the street from Besito on 110, I guess it is, going up into the village there. And I was kind of like, wow, that's, you know, kind of, it's an odd location and tough parking, but they do have a lot in the back. There's a parking lot in the back. So if you go around, you know, the block, you'll find it, and they have a back entrance. Well, anyway, it's the Tunney family. David Tunney is the younger brother. John, I believe, is his older brother, and he's got, I think John has Besito, and he was partners in Eisenhower Park with Anthony.
Do they also own Farm Italy?
Yeah, they do.
Wow.
So anyway, they opened up this place, Luca, which was going to be like a steakhouse, but you can't really call it a steakhouse because it doesn't have that, you know, that big kind of Rothmans-y, you know, insignia, you know, big sprawling place. It's kind of, I don't say intimate, I mean, but kind of, and it's a beautifully done inside. He renovated the entire place, spent a lot of money. So I said to Val, let's check it out because it's early. It's going to be crazy because A, it's a Saturday, and B, it's the second night they're open, you know. But if we go early enough, you know, maybe we'll get a seat at the bar, right? So we head over there like 6 o'clock. Place is jammed, right? The bar's all taken. So I'm standing there, you know. We ordered a I told the horses, we're just going to wait for a bar seat to open up. So, okay. So we stand there. We order a glass of wine. So David sees me, comes over. Oh, my God, T, you know, great to see you. How have you been? Yeah, da-da. Let me get you a drink, you know. So anyway, he's a fabulous host and just a sweetheart of a guy and a talented guy. I mean, they build really nice restaurants, you know. I have a lot of respect for what they do. So anyway, he comes over. They send me a drink. And he goes, you know, you want a table? I said, I don't want to, you know, you're busy here. You know, I'll sit at the bar. He said, no, I'll get a table for you. So he winds up about a half an hour later bringing us to the, you know, kind of like the best seat in the house where you could see everything that was going on. And it was a table of four, it should have been. And he sits us there. It was a deuce. I was kind of like, geez, I'm screwing up this old guy's night here. And he says, yeah, order up big, man. You know, I want your opinion on everything, right? So we ordered a couple appetizers, and we're going to split a pasta. So I put the order in. I order a bottle of wine, and a guy comes to the table with the wine, and, you know, David comes over. He brings out a first course. You know, hey, this is on us. And he brings out a second and things for us to try. And it was like almost like a tasting menu again, you know. And, you know, everything was really good. He had interesting stuff. He had a, you know how you see melon prosciutto, you know, was served. You get the piece of melon with the prosciutto over the top. They did that with a, I'm trying to think of the name of the melon. It was an oddball melon, but it was really ripe and it was really beautiful. But he had tuna crudo draped over it instead of like the prosciutto would be, you know. And he had this sort of ponzu-y kind of sauce on it. It was really, really good. I'm trying to think of what else. We had a scallop that was great. We had a halibut that was great. All of it was really good. They had one pasta that was like, I thought it was a little conceived. It was like a stuffed pasta with goat cheese and foie gras, and I'm thinking that's not quite the combination I would pick, but, you know, let's give it a try. And it was fine. But I got to tell you, it's probably one of the best meals I've had in a Long Island restaurant in a long time. And at the end of the night, he comes over, he goes, hey, that's with us. I'm like, what? He goes, no, that's on me, man. I just appreciate you being here. And, you know, thanks for coming and appreciate the feedback. Everything was great, man. It was just, I feel bad, you know, because I ordered a bottle of wine or whatever. He's no, it's good. So anyway, I left a very overly substantial tip because A, out of guilt, and B, out of concern, and we left. And I got to tell you, I can't say enough about the place. The place was fabulous.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous.
They have a pretty incredible history of a library of restaurants over the years.
Yeah. They and everyone is, they do a good job. It's like, you know, you may not love everything they do. It's like anybody else, mine included. But it's not like we're not trying.
And they own Besito?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But and that's the key. To me, it's like, you know, has every restaurant I've ever owned been stellar? No, of course not. But it's not from lack of trying. that's all you can ask out of, you know, your employees and out of yourself is to, you know, to try as hard as you can. But they do some nice things. I remember when Besito first opened in Huntington, they had a chef. His name was Greg Lake, I believe. And he was really schooled in Mexican food. And they opened up a Mexican restaurant that was serving food like you would find in Mexico, not like you would find in New Mexico or in the Mexican restaurants that we have here on Long Island. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but this was authentic. I mean, this was, you know, flavors out of the Yucatan and really, really good stuff. They've modified it somewhat, I think, to kind of bend to the tastes of Long Island, which is always the case. You know, eventually every restaurant winds up with Caesar salad with grilled chicken for some reason. And I'm one of them. But the bottom line is, I just want to, you know, emphasize the fact that they try really hard and they do a really good job. And again, is every meal going to be the, oh my God, it's the end all be all? No, but I'm telling you, you go to this place, Luca, in Huntington, you're going to have a great meal. I told him, you got to come on the show, you know. He's, well, I'm not really good at that. Maybe I'll send somebody. Come on, we'll get you through it, you know. So anyway, he gave me his number and I'm going to call him. We'll have him on the show.
Wow, that's some pretty incredible reviews. Hopefully our listeners are happy that Stu's being very quiet and letting Tom talk.
Oh, no.
Every so often we get some comments, and we appreciate feedback. And you can talk to us through fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. The different things you just spoke about sparked so many thoughts. I actually had to write things down.
Uh-huh.
So
I'm glad you're paying attention.
Yeah, no, I am. So down at Jones Beach, there's multiple levels of VIP when you go to a concert. And it's funny. I talk about the Jones Beach Amphitheater much. I remember going there as a kid, and literally Guy Lombardo used to ride through the what's now the orchestra of the venue, and on a little motorboat. I guess he lived in Freeport or something. Yeah. But the stage was separated from the orchestra with a canal, a moat.
Yeah.
And it was really, really cool. And I really wonder, I actually meant to ask my mom, but I don't know if this is a figment of my imagination or I really remember it. They have, again, many levels of VIP.
Didn't he always have the captain's hat on?
Yes,
right? Like the guy on the...
Which is funny because they've had a couple of interesting shows this summer. They had Jimmy Buffett's...
the band, the Coral Reefer Band.
Thank you. They had the staff with Lays and captain hats.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks before that, they actually had Yacht Rock
the same thing.
So it's really cool when you know everybody's in the spirit of things.
Sure.
They had some wonderful events this year, and they've had some tough shows. When I say tough, it's because of weather situations. Train was there a couple of weeks ago, and I think Bare Naked Ladies opened up for them, and Bare Naked Ladies got their set in, and all of a sudden a storm rolled in.
Oh, boy.
And they had to empty the arena, and it was terrible for the people that were there. A lot of people were trying to figure out whether or not to attend, and if you bought tickets, it pinched if you didn't show up and you spent your money, because you don't get your money back.
Sure.
But, if you were coming from out east and it was questionable, the weather, a lot of people bailed.
Yeah.
But the show ended up going on, but it was a real mess.
Yeah.
And then just recently there was another concert, and it was like WLIR, new wave type music, from the British takeover. It was Howard Jones, Modern English, English Beat, and Wang Chung, and they said it was going to be a terrible night. And we had scheduled on KJOY, our sister station, KJOY 98.3, to have a tailgate. And then the radio station was also going to have a presence inside. And KJOY plays an interesting mix of music. It's music of the 80s and 90s today's hits.
Yeah.
But for a show like that, I thought it would be really cool. They usually have a DJ on site, and I knew that they were going to be playing the music of the night. So I asked if we could be there, backed up to them, and then have, let them play the music, and our on-air staff could mingle with the crowd, which would turn out to be really cool.
Right.
So the English Beat goes on stage, or whatever the band was, and then the storm rolled in. And it was 2 hours of madness. Now, I'm on the main concourse under a tent during a thunderstorm. Now, technically, to be under a tent probably is not the best place, but it was what it was. And at one point, my staff had to decide what to do. I mean, it wasn't going to end.
Yeah.
The weather, not the concert.
Yeah.
So they had stopped the concert. People all sought refuge, wherever they could. My people just said, we're going to have to just get it done. And we all packed up everything, and it was really, really, really crazy. Now there's like a main food concourse, and there's drains and everything, but at one point the drains couldn't take
back up,
all the water.
Yeah.
And that was the night that was that, a tornado in, Atlantic
Long
Beach. So, we were watching the water rise on the patio, essentially.
Yeah.
And you would see people walking, you'd see people running. They could care less that really it was above your ankle.
Wow.
And running through or whatever. Me not so much. I'm in a sport jacket and my dress shoes. And I gotta tell you, the people at the venue were very concerned about what was going on with me, because they said not exactly the attire, because everybody else had ponchos on.
Yeah, sure.
So at any rate, again, we're so blessed to have this venue, but you got to deal with the weather. So they decided at like 9:30 or something, or 9:15, that they were going to start the show again. So at about 9:45, they let people back into the arena. Now, I don't know if I took pictures, but the bands on stage were performing under tents.
Really?
I mean, that's how ridiculous
wow,
it was.
That's crazy.
Keyboards had towels over them.
Oh, God. It's a mess.
But, you know, you would think that it would start when it stopped raining.
Yeah.
But it was still raining. And there was a DJ on stage who's dancing around and stuff and going, Poncho Brigade, we're so proud of you. You're so loyal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so but you're standing on stage not getting wet. Mm. I had to give up at one point.
Well, it's not pleasant, you know.
No. And there was even a woman that was in an electric wheelchair that was out in the rain.
Really?
So I don't know. But during this, people just taking refuge, they didn't want to leave. And I guess eventually they did because there was like nobody there, a couple of hundred people watching the show. But the thing that really irked me, and this has nothing to do about Long Island food, wine, and lifestyle, but I got to vent.
Okay.
They had this DJ that was on stage that decided he had to do the top five songs of the decade of this, you know, new wave. And it was raining.
Yeah.
I didn't really care about the history lesson. He played 50 songs, you know, mixed them in between the different acts coming on. But that was ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. They should have just let the performers perform. I know it takes a few minutes to set up for the different acts, but this was above and beyond. This guy kept going when the band was on stage waiting to start again.
You know, I don't. There's something about DJs that they think they're the musicians. It's the most insane thing. I see it at weddings all the time, right? They think everybody's there to see them. It's like, you know, you're not the star of the show. You're a garnish. You know what I mean? Keep the music at a level where everybody can still talk to each other. I mean, I've been at weddings where I had to go into the hallway to talk to my friend, you know, because you couldn't hear yourself think. And the other thing that bothers me while we're on the subject is musicians that come out and decide to give you a political lesson, you know, 20 minutes of like, you know, I don't like Trump or Bush or I like this guy, I don't like the other. Who cares what you think? You know, I watch, you know, Bruce Springsteen, who arguably is one of the most successful, you know, I'm not a big fan, but, you know, you can't deny the success, you know. Do you really care what he thinks about politics?
So that brings up another night. So I went to see John Mellencamp.
Uh-huh.
And
he's another one that gets that one.
And I'm there with the Nassau County Police Commissioner and a bunch of law enforcement.
And I hope he's not an abolish the police.
The first song, and this is not anything that the police commissioner said. I was embarrassed on behalf of him. But the first song that John Mellencamp plays about is against ICE and police and this. And again, you're allowed to have your opinion.
Of course.
But I go to a concert to escape, to have unity in the love of the music.
Of course.
We don't need any more decisiveness.
I was dragged kicking and screaming to a Sheryl Crow concert about 20 years ago, right? I don't like Sheryl Crow. I don't dislike Sheryl Crow. I don't listen to her music. It's not my thing. It's I'm completely agnostic on Sheryl Crow.
But if you want to see her, she's coming this Sunday.
No, I'm good.
After the show is over, a couple hours later, over at Jones Beach for the Outlaw Music Festival.
Yeah, I'm like I said, live and let live. I hope Sheryl Crow has a fabulous career. Couldn't care less, you know. So I don't want to go. Oh, we're going. I'm not going. We're going. I'm not going. Here I am at the, you know, Sheryl Crow concert, right? And she comes out and she does this 20-minute diatribe on war isn't cool, man. You know, people die in wars. You know, wars are unfair to people. I'm like, oh my God, will this woman shut up? And I'm thinking, you know, could you just stop talking and sing? Because the faster you do that, the faster I can get out of here. So I'm talking to my girlfriend at the time. Afterwards, she goes, well, you know, you got to understand she has an opinion. I said, okay, she has an opinion. Let me give you a parallel example. Let's say next Saturday night at Cool Fish, I decide at 7 o'clock, you know what? I'm going to delay the appetizers for half an hour, and I'm going to stand in the middle of the dining room and tell everybody what I think about politics. Is that any less ridiculous? She goes, no, that would be ridiculous. Yeah, that's my point. My point is, A, First of all, that's not what everybody's there for. B, you're going to disagree with half the people. C, you're not converting anybody. You're not changing anybody's mind. It's just this oral enema that you get, you know, and I just don't get it. It's like, you know, you get these 20-year-old kids, they're asking their opinion on Afghanistan withdrawal. You know, you can't spell Afghanistan. What are you asking this kid for, you know?
No, it's crazy. So there is a thread about what I'm talking about. So, again, Jones Beach Theater, I always say, is our hidden treasure. If you ever get an opportunity,
oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're sitting in the orchestra, which floods when there's high tide, just so you know. So you pay a lot of money to get wet shoes.
Yeah.
Or you can sit all the way upstairs in the 300s and essentially watch the show on the big screens. But
well, that's what it is. Yeah, it's a movie.
It's the ambiance. I mean, again, some of the shows are just such great shows. You put your arm around your other half and you just soak it in. Well, I see so many families that they bring the kids.
Yeah.
It's multi-generation. It's just the coolest scenario.
Courtney's bringing her kids to the Chris Stapleton thing. You know, she's bringing my grandkids. They're 11 and 9, you know. But, yeah, and you know, the thing is, too, there's a communal feeling of like-mindedness. You know, if you're going to see, let's say, I don't know, Leonard Skinner or whatever.
I just saw Skinner.
You got a lot of Leonard Skinner fans. You're all the same music. We kind of dig the same thing. We're probably all basically the same age.
God.
You're in there with a bunch
you
of homies.
You create content on this show. So Skinner just played Jones Beach this past Friday night. And
Who opened for them?
It was crazy. Foreigner.
Oh, Foreigner. Yeah.
Which they have another new lead singer because the other one, Kelly something, disappeared.
I'll tell you a funny story about them when you're done.
So, but at any rate, Skinner has a special meaning to Kerry and her family.
Uh-huh.
And they always try to go as many times as they can. And
yeah, I saw you there last year.
Yes. So Kerry was there with her daughter Marcy and her stepdaughter Nikki, and we had a great time. But this is, I thought, really interesting. So when I'm at the beach, I'm sort of working. I'm like a concierge, making sure all my friends and guests from the radio station are all accommodated. And that means making sure they get to their seats, making sure they're, if they have VIP access, all is good, or delivering Italian ice from my friend Johnny's Rockin' Ice's kiosk over there. So I'm there a lot. So there's three levels of VIP. And the VIP is interesting because, if nothing else, they have like a wine bar there, which
I know
a great selection of wine, as Tom acknowledges. Just they don't know how much it costs.
Yeah,
but they have better bathroom facilities or nicer bathroom facilities and stuff, and it's a good place to spend some time before the show, during intermission or whatever, And of that, there's two levels. There's one group of seats that are right by the stage, and then there's another patio that's a little further away. There's a grass area that it's like going to a drive-in movie. You sit in beach chairs and you watch the show on this big screen. And then there's a VIP building that has an outdoor terrace, an indoor section on the first floor, and a rooftop. So I'm fortunate enough to get to dine many times in the vinyl room, which is the building. But you were talking about some different foods, and I'm curious to know what your thoughts are. For first of all, one of the things they have is like nachos with cubes of tuna. And I guess it has some sort of, what type of pink sauce would normally be drizzled over something?
That's
like
probably some kind of like a, you know, Japanese kewpie.
Well, maybe
spicy
it's more of a Thai chili.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. They also have something that I think is really cool, but it's potato tots with cubes of tuna.
Oh yeah,
and some sort of drizzle over it.
Variations.
I gotta tell you, Kerry goes, "That's disgusting." Well, I to be honest, I think the macaroni tidbits suck.
I'll show you.
So there.
Yeah.
So you.
I'll show you.
But it's interesting the different foods and stuff, and again, it's quite the The place to go, obviously, during a nice summer night.
Yeah, yeah.
And this year, the season at Jones Beach went anywhere from May, and it's going to go through October. Again, a fun time can be had by all. But we were talking, you talk about sushi a lot. Mm-hmm. And I keep finding that I think people are trying to get unique, the different sushi things. I know you have, just pieces of fish, which...
Sashimi.
Sashimi, and then there's the different rolls. Mm-hmm. And some of the rolls are cooked, and some of the rolls are not cooked. I know if you go up to, Blackstone, I think they have a steak roll that might also have, like, crab meat inside or whatever. I guess I'm a traditionalist. And if I'm having sushi, to me, it's fish.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting tired of all these unique versions where it's, again, cooked fish with different dressings on it, spicy mayo or aiolis.
Yeah, I know. It's gotten silly.
And I'm curious your thoughts. And then even with the crab that a lot of the... sushi have. Is it really crab or it's that artificial?
Well, yes and yes. Some of it is, some of it isn't, you know. My thoughts on sushi, I'm a little bit of a purist. And so I'll eat rolls. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with rice and fish. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just a different shape, you know. But, you know, when you start to do, you know, the peanut butter jelly roll and, you know, with the, it's just... It's almost like the pineapple pizza for me. It just gets to the point where I guess there's a market for it. Like there's an ass for every chair, you know. But the bottom line is it's so far away from the core, you know, fish thing. I mean, if you go to any of the very high end sushi places, you know, you won't find a lot of that stuff.
Will you find mango like in a roll or avocado?
Yeah, I mean, avocado's a staple. I mean, they use a lot of avocado in Japan, apparently. But the mango thing, it's all fine. I mean, you know, it's like pineapple pizza. It's fine if you love it, to eat it. I don't care.
Do Asians ever use potato in their foods?
I've never seen. They have purple potatoes, and they have these. What they call it'll come to me. I don't remember, but yeah. I mean, you know, look. All people cultivate, you know, what their ground will grow. You know, and you certainly grow potatoes over there. But the bottom line is, sushi is, you know, it's kind of like a really revered art to be a sushi chef. You know, it takes a long, long time to become an accomplished sushi chef, and. You know, when you see people I've seen this through Yama's eyes and, you know, other sushi chefs that I know, when, you know, they'll go through the process of procuring this fish, salting it, aging it, you know, deep freezing it so you kill any parasites that might be there. All of this and the slicing of it and the sauces that they make. And then they watch somebody just plunge it into... You know, soy sauce and a whole lot of wasabi.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's like fingernails on a blackboard.
You're a psychic. I'm just about to ask you, what's the proper etiquette? I know everything is personal preference.
Yeah.
But when you think of sushi, you think of soy sauce and you think of ginger and you think of the green stuff, the...
Wasabi.
Wasabi. So in the Tom Shordell etiquette of sushi, what are those three... items, how are they integrated into your meal?
Well, if you watch the sushi chef, there's always a little bit of wasabi on the bottom of your, you know, sushi or nigiri. That's probably enough, you know, unless you're a horseradish fan.
I see a lot of people mix the wasabi into the soy sauce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm the guy that you... I'm embarrassed to say, use my fingers sometimes and rub a layer, you know, a small layer on it to give it a... I'm not a big spice guy, but I like wasabi to enlighten
let
me.
Let you know it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the thing with wasabi is most, you know, Japanese restaurants, the I don't mean this the way it sounds, the lower end, the ones that aren't expensive and very...
Well, there's some that they put on your plate out of a tube.
Yeah, well, yeah, but most of them, it's a powder, and they mix it with water, and you know, they give you a little, you know, thumbful or whatever. You know, the really high-end places use the fresh wasabi root, and they grate it.
Yes.
You know, and they give it, that's a whole different experience.
That's like juice and horseradish.
Exactly, you know. But I think that, you know, if you want to follow sushi eating etiquette, you kind of like just, because it's all about tasting the fish. Once you plunge it into that pool of wasabi and soy, you know, now you're tasting wasabi and soy. All you're getting is that big, you know, hit through your nose or whatever.
So what do you do with the soy sauce?
You can dip just a little bit, you know, as almost like adding salt to a meal, you know, rather than throwing it in there.
You know, that's the way I like to do it.
And, you know, you can like rub a little wasabi
on it. But to be honest.
But use your chapstick. Don't use your finger.
I should do it that way. It, you know, what's interesting is I can't get it right with the soy sauce because usually they give you that little plate or bowl to dip. And with the rice being like a sponge, you know, sometimes it gets overdone. It's hard.
Take the fish off, dip it, and put it back on.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's also sometimes at, I guess, parties, when there's past hors d'oeuvres, or even if it's just a buffet type thing, they might have like a tube of like a squirter of the soy sauce, so that you can
look. You know, I think that, you know, how you eat your food is certainly personal, and I'm okay with however you do it. You know, I don't care. But I think that if you really want to taste the fish, and that's what sushi is, it's about the fish. And it's about the rice also.
And that's about anything, you know. You can gobble stuff down and not taste it.
Well, some people that put ketchup on hot dogs and, you know, whatever, and people that salt their food before they taste it. I mean, there's a million, you know, references I can give you to probably bad ideas about food. But bottom line is, you know, if you like it, eat it. It's like I go with wine. You like red, drink red with fish. I don't care. Who cares?
What do you do with ginger?
Ginger is basically there for two reasons. One is a palate cleanser, and two is that there are properties in ginger that will basically, you know, kill any impurity that might be in the fish. So that's why the ginger's there, the pickled ginger's there. But, you know, again, it's like, I like pickled ginger. I can eat it right out of the, you know, the barrel. But I don't use it with the fish. I mean, I've seen some people put the ginger on the fish, and you know it's like anything else. If you want to taste the product. If you want to, you know, you could take soy sauce and wasabi in a shot glass, you know what I mean, and just drink it, and you get the same flavor.
So the ginger can be like an Italian intermezzo.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like a palate cleanser. Instead of sorbet, you can use the ginger. You know. Or at the end of the meal when you want to get that fish taste out or whatever.
So taking a little bit of a left turn, I talk many times about the bread, choice of bread, selection of bread with a meal is so important. And I was at a barbecue this week, and my good friend Marty throws a couple of parties each year in the day. He used to have one that was for acquaintances, one was for family, and the other was for business partners. And luckily, I'm connected through Kerry, and we get invited to all of them.
Oh, nice.
There's been some change over the years, family members missing and this, that, and the other. But this year, Marty had two parties, and he serves brats, bratwurst.
So
instead of hot dogs.
Yeah, they're nice.
Well, I guess actually he does hot dogs and the brat. But when you have it with a really nice bread, it's delightful. I mean, many times for whatever reason, I prefer like a potato roll or whatever,
or
as compared to the bland white bread rolls or whatever. But something so simple. I mean, some people like sausage and peppers on their hero or whatever. Mm-hmm. A hero roll is also nice. It's a different texture than the so-called potato roll or whatever. But I found it so delightful to just be able to just have the naked bratwurst and grilled, and it was delightful. A quick tip, but you probably already know it, is if you're cooking sausage and making sausage and pepper heroes for a barbecue or whatever, you can just slice up your peppers and onions and put it in some tin foil and tent it, and, you know, 10-15 minutes, you got...
Hey, steam them out.
Yeah, it's incredible. As is when we talked the other day about, you know, different options for cooking corn, which we talked about this before we went on the air. Is it bicolor corn or multicolor corn?
Yeah, bicolor.
Everybody's got a sign that says that. And is there a difference in taste between yellow corn, white corn, or the bicolor corn? And are there other varieties?
I don't think there's taste differences. I think there are sugar differences, you know, different degrees of sweetness to the corn. You know, the riper, the better. I mean, some corn, you know, I've had corn from out east that was absolutely fabulous. I've had corn from out east that was less than absolutely fabulous, you know. Same thing with Jersey and whatever, you know. So the one thing I'll tell you about corn is when it's starting to get old, it reveals itself. You can't keep it yellow. It'll turn brown in the pan, you know. So, you know, keep an eye on that if you're going to cut it off the cob and do it that way. Otherwise, just steam the corn. It's fine. But it's a seasonal thing to me. I mean, whether it's bicolor or yellow, whatever, you know, if you get it in season, it's going to be great. If you get it towards, you know, the beginning of the end, it's, you know, in the beginning, it's going to be a little tough and not as sweet. And at the end, it's going to be kind of brown and not so good.
So I sit here anxiously waiting to actually ask my mom. We've been buying stone fruit. I'm talking real Tommy now.
Yeah.
You didn't peaches have a deal on that, right? And nectarines. Stone fruit. Yeah. And when you get it from the supermarket, not so good. You know, it's just not getting it there. And many times, I don't know how to pick a melon or, you know, corn or whatever.
Right.
But so I've been trying to spice up my mom's life. And when I was out east, I talked a couple of weeks about stopping at the farm stands.
Sure.
But I live in Farmingdale, and every Sunday they have a farmer's market, and they have all different things. But I head to the vegetables, and I picked her up a beefsteak tomato. Now, is that beefsteak tomato going to taste that much better than, you know, the thing you get at the at you know, the supermarket?
Of course, yeah, it's going to taste better. And the reasons for that is that the ones that supermarkets buy are basically engineered for shelf life. And, you know, you have to sympathize. I mean, they're selling this stuff, and, you know, not everybody buys everything every day, you know, so you have to have some stay power. And there's been a lot of tomatoes that have been kind of engineered, you know, genetically engineered to hang around a while. You know, it's just a question of economics. From the farm stand, you know, you're going to get something that was grown, hopefully, you know, locally. I mean, a lot of the farm stands buy stuff too, you know. Don't be fooled, you know. But the bottom line is, if, you know, if they're growing tomatoes, those tomatoes are going to be much better. And the other thing is, don't refrigerate them, because that kind of arrests the flavor, you know. You want to keep them.
So last week I picked up a yellow watermelon.
Yeah.
It tasted very refreshing. I would find it difficult to describe the taste from a yellow one to a...
No, they're the same. It's just in your head, you know, you're thinking pink, you know.
I bought my mom some corn, and again, going back to the stone fruit, I've been buying her peaches, and I've told the story how, you know, the supermarket did just tasteless. When I was out east, it was those 100-degree days, and I left it in the car.
Yeah, it was roasted.
I thought it would still work out. I thought it would be like, you know, stewed, you know, peaches or whatever. No, didn't work out that
Cobbler.
Way. And then I've been getting peaches at the farm stand, and Mom says she's been having fresh peaches with her cereal every morning. So she's a happy camper.
Well, I'll tell you one more food experience I had over the week, and we started out. We ordered. I was with Valen and Hawk, my grandson, and who didn't shut up for the entire 2 hours we were sitting there. It was hilarious. But anyway, we started out, we had a fish taco, which was very good. We had a mixed grill, seafood mixed grill, and it was calamari, shrimp, octopus, all tossed together with concentrated tomatoes, arugula, some capers, and a vinaigrette that was absolutely fabulous. We had baked clams, which is kind of like my guilty pleasure. For some reason, I know they're kind of down-home, wholesome, Italian sort of. I love them. I just love clams anyway.
But we were talking before about, you know, you can slurp something down. Mm-hmm. So if you're having, you know, clam shooters or whatever, yeah, you know, don't you have to stop and chew them, or you just swallow it
I guess either or. However, you know, some people want to get rid of them quick, other people want to savor them.
But you still get...
Yeah, the clamminess, you know what I mean? So then we had one other appetizer. We had a textbook version of peach and burrata. You know, they had grilled peaches with burrata. Peaches were local and excellent. And then my grandson had a seafood linguine thing with some hot cherry peppers and some fresh basil. And he liked that until he got to the cherry peppers. He didn't like them so much. And then Val and I split a tilefish that was, fresh tilefish. And it was just a fabulous meal. We had a couple glasses of Chardonnay, and he had a Shirley Temple. And it was at Allure.
I was just going to ask you what the name of the restaurant is.
Now, the reason I'm mentioning that is because this is the last year of my lease at Allure. And the property was bought by a big concern that they have marinas all up and down the East Coast. And he was supposed to tell me what his intentions were about, you know, renewing the lease, that and the other thing. And he hasn't come to me. So I got a feeling that they're going to shut it down and renovate it. And I think they have relationships with other people, you know. So for me, this is probably going to be the last year at Allure, you know. And we've been there 16 years. It's been a long time.
Wow.
So, you know, I was saying I don't miss restaurants when I sell them. I remember my ex-wife asking me one time, you know, when I sold Panama Hattie, she goes, oh, it was your first one. You always want to do that. You know, you're going to feel bad. I said, I don't really know, you know. And as soon as I got the money, I flipped the key over my shoulder and never looked back. It was like, oh, this is, you know. And I realized that it's people that I get attached to and not things or places. But I was saying about last night, you know, when I was looking out at the bay, I said, you know, I will miss this view. I mean, that's the thing. You know, you look in the bay, it's a gorgeous spot, you know. So it is what it is. And we'll see. I mean, you know, at some point maybe we'll talk. But, you know, generally my experience, and you watch it in the city too, is that you get to the end of your lease and then all of a sudden the landlord, they want increases, which is natural. I mean, their price, you know, their stuff goes up. But you reach a point of diminishing returns and saturation with these things where you can't possibly sustain it anymore, you know. And everybody thinks you can keep going up and up and up and up, but there's a finite amount of money that people are going to pay for a piece of fish at some point. You know, I should be charging $80 for something I'm charging $35 for, you know.
I was just reading an article about lobster, you know, what the cost used to be and what the cost is now. It went from like $20 a pound to $40 a pound or something like that.
Well, that's for lobster meat. I mean, you know, I pay $50 and that's wholesale. So when people talk about $100, you know, lobster salad in the Hamptons, not that far off, really, you know?
Well, so kudos to Stu Leonard's. I told the story last week where I got my mom a hot lobster roll drizzled with butter from Stu Leonard's, $15, which is a bargain.
It's a bargain. I'm almost skeptical.
And, you know, she goes, but what about the mayonnaise and celery, that the one I like? I forget which one is which, but
yeah, I'm with her. I like the cold one. I don't, you know, my daughter loves that one hot drizzle with butter. Not for me.
Which rolls into the next story. So I call my mom on Sunday. I said, "What are we doing for dinner?" I said, "If you want, you know, I'll get you your cold lobster roll, make up for last week, because I really felt bad."
Yeah.
And she goes, "No." She goes, "There's a restaurant that I used to go to, an Asian, essentially a Chinese takeout, but most restaurants of that nature today are only takeout."
Yeah,
this is one that was in the Five Towns and also has a seating area. She goes, "We used to get crispy duck." And I said, "Okay, I'll run over there."
Yeah,
all good.
Yeah.
And it made me think, I think there was a restaurant near Green Acres, and we used to get something called wosuap, which is a crispy duck in a brown sauce.
Right.
But I saw it. I think it was called House of Chang, and it brought that memory. I said, okay, let's get that. We got this stewed duck dish that was duck over vegetables in a brown sauce. There was nothing. There was no crispy in it.
Yeah, well,
it was false advertising.
Yeah,
but that was really weird. And then, real quick, we were talking about the fruit thing. Why at the farmer's market during the summer is pears on the table? I think a pears is a fall fruit.
It is. I mean, that's the top season for it. But like I said, I mean, you can get them anywhere, in any time now. I mean, because of airplanes and whatever, you fly them up from the south or whatever. But again, it's you want to eat them. Why bother with pears when you have peaches and plums at the moment? You know what I mean? That's what you should be focused on. Watermelon, that should be focused on. And then wait when the watermelon and the peaches and the plums go out, then the pears and the squashes and stuff. That's what's so great about eating through the seasons is you get everything right when it's supposed to be there, You can get around that for sure, but, what's the point? You should be patient and wait for the pears later on. I don't know. The whole, supermarket thing, it's a great convenience. But if you watch other cultures, if you go into Chinatown, I spent a lot of time in Chinatown, between the Kung Fu thing and, whatever else I was doing, some building back then. But, they're shopping every day. You see all these ladies with the little orange bags, They go to the grocer. It's the guy on the corner with the vegetables, If you go to H Mart over here in Hicksville, they have some of the best vegetables I've ever seen. It's not like the same thing that you get in the supermarkets. And, even the Wild by Nature and stuff, I mean, some of the stuff is better. But, tomatoes, that kind of thing, fruits, ripe stuff, you got to go to farm stands for that.
So as we close out the show this week, I just wanted to give a shout out. Recently, we gave away the Barry Manilow tickets. Mm-hmm. And when we chose the winners and distributed the tickets, it gave me the opportunity to chat with some of our listeners, which was really, really, really delightful spend some time with people that enjoyed our conversations.
Sure.
So that's been very nice. And recently, Bill O'Leary's been helping us out with, there is a Playing with Fire Facebook page now, and you can look for that on Facebook. And also a number of the shows this summer at Jones Beach, I've bumped into Joe Manfredo and Judy. So I just want to thank you, all of our listeners.
Yeah,
it's so much fun. I'm very humbled, as I always say, to sit across from Tom and share some incredible time just talking about, as the show says, about Long Island food, wine, and lifestyle. Somehow, whatever we talk about can be encapsulated in that verbiage.
Sometimes broadly defined, but we get it in there.
So at any rate, if you want to converse with us, it's fire@whli.com. And I look forward to seeing you next week, Tom, to hear your family's adventures at Jones Beach they go to see Chris Stapleton.
Yeah. All right, with that, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life like we normally do. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. And keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And they're pretty important.
Come on now, everybody. Get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
It's summer, and it's time for Smoking Al's Party Catering Menu. Make your next party a smoking one with Al's ribs, barbecue meats, chicken, appetizers, and a whole lot more. Try Al's new fantasy platters in the comfort of your backyard or one of Al's party packages. With the hot weather upon us, your party's going to be smoking. Smoking Al's Massapequa Park. Call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.